21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Hello, this is Ingo Swann, the author of Penetration, the Question of Extraterrestrial and Human Telepathy. And you're listening to the wonderful 21st Century Radio with the amazing Dr. Bob Hieronymus. She's a worry now, walking down this same highway. I don't see nothing new, but I feel a lot of change. And I get the strangest feeling as I'm heading for the light.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus. My executive producer, research assistant, Laura Cordner. Our engineer is Noah Dankner. Well, thank you, Brother Ingo. I know you are heading for the light on some plane of existence right now, and we'll be talking about you and your artwork in just a few minutes. Well, I've been looking forward to tonight's show for months, in part because Baltimore is finally going to see proof of what I've always contended, that many rock and roll artists are visionary prophets. Now, I'm referring to Jimi Hendrix's visual artwork specifically, and we'll get into that in a few minutes too, but first, I want to read a paragraph by Buckminster Fuller from his book Utopia or Oblivion, The Prospects for Humanity. I've always been a great admirer of Buckminster Fuller's writings, but this one came to me this week as I was reading Louise Harrison's memoir entitled My Kid Brother's Band, a.k.a. The Beatles. That's right, Lou Harrison is George Harrison's sister. Louise will be joining us on the air in a few weeks, but I really wanted to read this Buckminster Fuller passage for you as an introduction to how music can play a part in soul evolution. Here it is, quote, "In your musical education world and in your professional meetings, I think it important that you realize that within the next 10 years, the world of science and the world of seemingly very pragmatic affairs will be turning to the world of music for leadership in fostering the spontaneous development of the most powerfully coordinate capabilities of evolving life. Rather than being a pleasant sideshow for the more serious central affairs of economic life, you who deal with music of the universe and the innate coordinate capability of man to tune into the music of the new life may be recognized as dealing with the sensitive mainspring of life itself, because of which you may find yourselves called by society to perform its most responsible task of allowing life to succeed," end quote. That was in 1969, friends. Well, for nearly 20 years, the city of Baltimore has been the home of my favorite museum in the world, and I'm not alone in that belief. For example, The Economist wrote, "Baltimore, home of the first American museum in 1786, has since November 1995 the home of the most innovative and delightful American visionary art museum." As a matter of fact, I got that quote mixed up with another one, but here we go with CNN. It referred to it as one of the most fantastic museums anywhere in America, and Travel and Leisure noted that of the 10 places to see before your 10, AVAM is number one on the list. How did this happen in Baltimore? It's because of Rebecca Alban Hofberger, who is herself a great visionary and who I've known for over 40 years. Visionaries find it easy to identify other visionaries. Rebecca founded the American Visionary Art Museum in 1989 and has since served as director as well as curator for several of the museum's most acclaimed exhibitions, including All Faiths Beautiful, The Art of Storytelling, Lies Enchantment, Humor and Truth, and she and her co-curator, Jody Willey, have been working feverishly to present to Baltimore and Planet Earth an exhibition of the work of more than 40 visionaries entitled The Visionary Experience, St. Francis to Finster, which will be open to the public on Saturday, October the 4th, but you'll be able to attend the exhibition preview party on October the 2nd. The exhibit will run through Sunday, August the 30th, 2015. I'm still back in the 1900s there. So now you know about the Visionary Art Museum and its founder of AVAM. What about her co-curator, Jody Willey? Critically acclaimed filmmaker, publisher, ardent documentation of all things fringe, Jody Willey first met famed visionary artist Reverend Howard Finster in his Paradise Garden back in 1988. And based in Los Angeles, Willey has been a devoted fan and frequent visitor of the American Visionary Museum since 1998, when she first met Rebecca Hofberger and edited and published the award-winning catalog The End Is Near. For AVAM's eponymous, I think, did I correct? Yeah, I got that right. Eponymous is like Hieronymus. Exhibition, I'm sorry about that. Exhibition. Willey is known for her work exploring American subcultures through collaborations with self-taught artists and new religious groups, and is co-founder of book publishing companies Dilettante Press, Process Media. She has documented a number of visionary artists over the commune, the Source Family, 2012, sold out major film festivals and premiered theatrically in 60 cities. Wow. Joining us tonight are both creators, Rebecca Alban Hofberger and Jody Willey. And later in hour two, we'll hear from Janie Hendricks, sister of Jimi Hendrix, who personally brought to AVAM five of brother Jimi Hendrix's visionary art and a self-portrait. I can tell you this, Janie Hendricks was mightily impressed with AVAM, and she told us so. Now, after that longest introduction on planet Earth, because actually we have planet Earth listening to us tonight, and they like to know who these people are in America, let's find out what these two visionaries have prepared for you and the rest of the planet to see this October the 4th through August the 30th, 2015. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Rebecca and Jody.
That was a perfect introduction. I love that Buckminster Fuller quote. Wasn't that incredible, Jody?
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much for having us, too.
Well, certainly. Hey, turn up your... Nope, I'm supposed to turn up my microphone here? Okay, I'll do that. Rebecca, what was the inspiration and purpose for this extraordinary exhibition, The Visionary Experience, St. Francis de Finster?
Well, multifold. Firstly, you know how every single year we pick one grand theme that has always inspired humanity. But I thought it was time to really look at what is the visionary experience. How do scientists and musicians and composers and poets and inventors and engineers come up with new ideas, something that no one else has ever brought forth? And that moment of aha or eureka is at the center of this exhibition. And then the most prolific artist, living or dead, was the late Reverend Howard Finster, who, had he lived, would have been 100 years old. And so I thought it was the time to do a centennial review of his life and his work and his visions. And really take him out of any being pigeonholed as this kind of eccentric Southern Baptist minister, which he was on one level, but his very first book was about being a stranger from another world, covered in UFOs, etc. He truly was not your everyday Southern Baptist minister.
Well, thank heavens for that. Whoa. Well, Jody, what was your reaction when you first learned of the challenge of gathering the works of 40-plus artists who were visionaries?
Well, I was greatly humbled because I've been such a fan of Rebecca's for so many years, and AVAM has been my favorite museum since I first came there. I just can't think of any museum that brings to life and artworks and brings art to the people the way it does in so many ways. And so I was thrilled and a little bit intimidated and very excited to get to work with Rebecca to bring this show forward.
Well, you guys,
I can't think of anybody, Bob, I mean really anybody anywhere on the planet who could have done a better job. This is really kind of, I guess, the first major debut of Jody as a curator, but she is so masterful at storytelling, her edits and stuff in her film work, and how she has, what she writes, what she cares about is so sincere. So it was really, you know, a natural, and she understood the whole, not just the ones that have been during our lifetime, but really going back mining the distant past for those people who kind of get a word from the divine and start new communities, new visions, like no one else on the planet. So she was totally my number one choice, and it's been a joy to birth this show together. She's been amazing.
Well, also, Rebecca, while you're on here, what were the challenges you had to overcome in selecting 40-plus visionary artists from all over the planet?
Well, there was one, you know, I always look for those divine coincidences, and the late remote viewer, the most famous remote viewer, Ingo Swann, out of nowhere, I get this call from his sister and his niece saying that they had wanted us to become the repository of his work, and I was almost moved to tears because I'd certainly known about Ingo for decades, and his paintings, once they arrived, were even more extraordinary than any of us could have ever hoped. Mm-hmm. And you, Bob, with your lifelong work with the Founding Fathers and their vision of a better world, really begin the conversation of this exhibition. And if people think, I think they're less inclined to now, that there is some exaggeration about the spiritual experiences and sometimes even downright mystical experiences of the Founding Fathers and the power of their vision for a new world at great cost to themselves. They only have to look at Ingo Swann.
Yeah.
Because Ingo Swann, you know, was part of the remote viewing program, which openly, you know, has the government has very admittedly said, you know, hook millions and millions of dollars is a multi-decade effort, and it continues to this day. So the fact that it's no longer, you know, kind of a subset of people who believe that, you know, communication beyond anything, any obvious means or mechanical means is possible, you know, that's now fact. And so we love the balance of the ancient with the new. And all through the exhibition, we kind of weave the wisdom of visionaries from, you know, even millennia past and their insights with the cutting edge, you know, newest physicists, et cetera.
Well, Jody, what would you like to add on how those visionary artists were selected?
Well, for me, I've spent, I guess, maybe over the last 20 years, I've just been especially drawn, really ever since I met Howard Finster back in the late 80s and visited a number of self-taught artists in the South, I've always been very struck by people who have such a strong sense of inner knowledge and intuition and awareness, and who clearly have access to realms that most people don't have access to on a regular basis. And I've just been drawn to those people. And so for me, a lot of the art that I brought to the show was from these artists that I've followed or discovered or I've gotten to know personally over the last 25 years or so, who exhibit these visionary qualities, and there, you know, there are a number of them, especially these visionary groups, you know, that live in intentional communities or have esoteric schools that foster visionary awareness, you know, in individuals. So that's really what helped lead me to a number of the selections.
Okay. And then, Bob, you know, it's so funny, you know, just things conspire to make wonder in the exhibitions at the American Visionary Art Museum. And my stepson, actually, Jack Hofberger, called and said, did you read the New York Times about Jason Paget, this guy, you know, who had no real interest in even math, was not a good student, et cetera, who had this experience where he was, you know, beaten up in a bar and fell, hurt his head, and when he came out of his coma, everything that he could see was like the fractal nature. If he was running water, he could see almost the underpinning, molecular underpinning of water, and just everything visually had changed, and his passion became physics, and his own lay intuitive understanding of physics was so astonishing that, you know, trained physicists, you know, went to hear him speak and lecture, and he very obsessively draws some of this wonder that he perceives. That as Einstein said, that God does not play dice with the universe, that there is this amazing structure, this language of math, just like all language, another way of expressing oneself symbolically, and the great truth. And so, you know, we followed up, and Jason's work is in the show. So sometimes it's just that whisper of something that just seems absolutely right. And, you know, just we had the final entry into this show was a man named Odinga, who was born to a 12-year-old. His mother was 12 when she became pregnant with him, 13 at birth. The father was 14, very violent upbringing. But this gentle soul emerged with amazing work, like from totally another realm, but that will be the final piece that is in this exhibition.
Well, that's the final piece we can talk about before this commercial. It's about ready to come up. And our guests are Rebecca Hofberger and Jody Willey, the founder, director, and co-curator of the American Visionary Art Museum, which is Ms. Hofberger, and the co-curator of the new exhibit, Jody Willey. On October the 4th, opening of the Visionary Experience, St. Francis de Finster. Come to the exhibition preview party on October the 2nd, avam.org. Phone for AVAM is 410-241-1900. The Source Doc DOC, I'm going to spell that, sourcedocdoc.com. Jody's first feature-length film can be seen there.
Yes, this is Ziggy Marley saying love, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus. One love, y'all.
Well, this is one of the most interesting interviews, you know. Over the years, I've been doing interviews, but this one is very special.
Yeah, Ziggy will be back in just a little while, friends. You know, now, before we discuss the various artists and the works that have been chosen, there's something I want to emphasize, and that is the crew who do the physical labor, setting up, taking down, and here's a few of the names. George Geary, Director of Exhibitions and Capital Projects. Mary Dwan, Registrar. Teresa Segretti, Director of Design, Framing, Art, and Handling are Daniel Inglet, Sandra Jones, Valerie Long. Art handlers, preparators are Eric Gerber, Joshua Batten, Michael Benevito, Bob Little, Melissa Morrow, Kevin Runyon. These are extraordinary people, really dedicated and just love this museum, as well as his curator and founder. Do you want to say anything about this? These folks here, Rebecca?
Oh, my gosh. It's a SWAT team. I don't think there's any museum in the world that does such large exhibitions. Takes out and reinstalls and never been one day late in literally less than 5 weeks. So it's a challenge. But I have to tell you, Dr. Bob, that Jody is such an expert on this Unarius, this fascinating group that is so charming at the same time. I mean, this is an exhibition that has a lot for even kids to come in, for people who just really want to understand, whether it's standing in the shower or walking alone in the woods or listening to their dreams, where they get their best, you know, ideas and understanding. But Jody, would you speak, because I love it when you do, about the Unarius group?
Cross Unarius about maybe 15 years ago, and have always been completely just drawn to them because they've made these incredible films and videos over the years of their past life psychodrama as spiritual therapy, and I always had wanted to learn more about them. And so a couple of years ago, I went down and visited their Academy of Science that they have down in El Cajon and got to meet some of them. And the Unarius Academy is this group that was formed in 1954 by two advanced clairvoyants, a husband and wife team of clairvoyants, Ernest Norman and his wife Ruth Norman. And Unarius stands for Universal Articulate Interdimensional Understanding of Science. So it promotes an interdimensional understanding of life based on what they call fourth dimensional physics. And they also promote the free energy technologies of Nikola Tesla, but they're very into spiritual healing through past life psychodrama. And Ernest Norman, so fascinating. These characters are just such classic American characters who we don't hear enough about, but they have so much to teach us and so much joy in what they do. Ernest Norman was born with an abnormally large head in the early 1900s and became this physics prodigy and became really sensitive and started becoming a well-known psychic during World War II. And he met and fell in love with Ruth Norman when she was about 47 years old. And so they founded this foundation. And after Ernest passed, Ruth decided to make films and videos with her students of their past life psychodramas. She was a very creative and exuberant woman. She was probably in her 70s. She liked to wear rainbow capes and glittery platform shoes and wigs with long blonde flowing hair. And what she would do is she would have her students channel, just like her husband channeled so many books, Voices from Venus and other planets. She also channeled a number of books, but she encouraged her students to be very creative and also taught them to be their own channel and get in touch with their own intuition. So she would channel, she'd start feeling a lifetime that they all had together, and they would start channeling it, and then each of them would make their own costumes by hand, do their own elaborate makeup. They would make elaborate sets, and then they would film these psychodramas that they were all living out sincerely. So there was no acting, there was no scripts, and they would just make these incredible films, which to me, when I saw them, they're just the most amazing outsider films I've ever seen. We had a major screening of them in Los Angeles where we world premiered one of their films, which had never been theatrically screened since it was made in the 70s, and it was just sold out in Hollywood. All of these people came, and we had an exhibition of their work. The science, the special effects in their films are extraordinary. They just had these wildly creative young people who were in the group and got together and worked really hard. And, you know, the Unarians were always kind of made fun of and dismissed by a lot of people in San Diego, especially in the 70s when they were doing all this work. But what's so fascinating to me is to get to know the people in the groups and get to see where their lives are now. And what I was so struck by with meeting the Unarians is that they seem like such decent, good people. It's clear that the metaphysical path that they walked on with this woman, as wild and outlandish as it might have been at times, has really served them and helped make them, you know, caring people and good members of their community, and they're just delights to work with. So we have in the show, we have a room called the Mystical Mavericks Room, and we've got in the show original costumes. We have one of Archangel Uriel, Ruth Norman's robes with 500 peacock feathers, and original art by the Unarians, because they were all taught how to paint, but taught to paint intuitively, no techniques. Yeah.
Well, I'm so happy you included them, because we had Ernest Norman on a couple of times. We had a real good time on the radio with Ernest.
Wow.
And it was an awful lot of fun also. I just loved the way they had their paintings of UFOs landing on top of each other, like a little Tinker Toy set, kind of like. I had wonderful sense of humor. Now, let's get to first, most important that I really wanted to touch on. You have produced, Rebecca, a full, large, full-color postcard that announces the Visionary Experience Collection. It's going to be a collector's item, I think, this particular card. It's an extraordinary painting by our dear friend Ingo Swann, who I spent a little time with in the 70s in various conferences, gatherings. We traded some of the best cigars in the world together. He knew good cigars. And later, he was a frequent guest on 21st Century Radio. We really miss him. So, Rebecca, who was Brother Ingo? You touched on him a little earlier, but who was this great man, and what did he accomplish besides visionary art?
Oh, well, so much, and his books speak well about that experience, because he was very interested in empowering others to be able to do much of what he could do. He was a very gentle guy, and what's interesting is, you know, the Russians actually kind of beat us to it in terms of having remote viewing program, which made us, you know, jump on it, too, and I actually met a remote viewer back in the 70s named Etel Deloach, who looked like everybody's ideal grandma and doesn't get mentioned as much. But Ingo did some things because he also had other abilities other than remote viewing. There's a lot on the web about him, but one of the things that impressed me most is that what was projected by all the learned scientists in terms of the conditions, temperature and atmospheres of different planets. When they started getting very creative with Ingo and sending him off Earth to make observations with his consciousness, he reported certain conditions that people said, oh, well, that's wrong, that's stupid, you know, that can't be right. And now that we've had the probes go out into deep space, what he predicted was absolutely spot on, which was not, I mean, he really, in the face of all these other great, you know, scientists of the day, he stood in opposition to them, and he was proven right. So it's another way of knowing. And one of my great heroes has always been Walter Russell. There's a lovely book called The Man Who Knew the Secrets of the Universe, and he was a true polymath. I mean, just on so many levels achieved great things. For example, thought he was not very good at, he had been neglecting his body because he was such an intellect, and he taught himself very late in life to be a figure skater. And he was able to win championships, over men, that were three decades younger than he was, and yet this gentleness with his wife as well, this balance, like you would say, of great, great love, and did a lot in, was the peer to Edison and a friend of Tesla's and FDR's, and we have his sculptural work. And he was not trained as a sculptor. He just saw how, kind of poor some of the attempts were made. And he said, well, let me try. And he just, produced these things. And, again, what's empowering to our visitors is this sense of listening within. And that you see it with some of the savants, who access real things. I grew up next to a savant who didn't negotiate this world very well, but if he heard your birthday, he would say, oh, that was a Wednesday, Becky. That was a Wednesday, instantly, and he was always right. Mm. And it didn't matter. He could calculate, all of the leap years and everything and get it. It was instant. So whether it's Puccini, who swore up and down that he never wrote one note of Madame Butterfly, that was wholly given to him in one shot. It's fascinating, this intuitive path. And I think many of the rock and roll musicians you brought up have this sense of awakening and absolutely knowing whole stanzas of lyrics or whole melodies that come to them. And really the interesting thing is to collectively look at where does this inspiration come from. And I think that's a very exciting thing. And Jody, would you like to speak about another Walter Russell devotee that was unexpected that we'll be having work in the show?
Yeah, it's so interesting. I was speaking to Michael Hudak, who runs the Walter Russell Foundation, when I was originally talking to him about securing some of the works. And he mentioned to me that the actor Terrence Howard, you know, he's the Academy Award nominated actor who, well, he actually won an Academy Award for performing Best Original Song in the film Hustle and Flow, where he received an Academy Award nomination. He's been in many more movies. And Michael Hudak mentioned to me that Terrence Howard had been a big Walter Russell fan and had just sent him some photographs of sculptures that he'd created based upon Walter Russell's scientific works and his theories. And I saw the sculptures, and they were made out of acetate. They were very detailed and gorgeous and elaborate, and ended up speaking to Terrence personally about them. And he's such a fascinating, such a fascinating person. He was, you know, one of 11 children who was very self-directed, and at a very early age started having these dreams where he would encounter these beings who would give him information, and information about what turned out to be physics concepts, and ideas involving math and things like that. And he said that when he would wake up, he would forget the ideas, but when he went back to sleep again in his dreams, he could access this knowledge and these beings. And he was always very sensitive from an early age as far as being able to sense things, energies like that. And what happened was, when he was in his early 20s, he encountered the works of Walter Russell, and all of a sudden this big light bulb went off in his head, because the knowledge that he had been imparted with in his dreams was, a lot of it was echoed in Walter Russell's theories and teachings. And so he saw some substantiation for the information he'd been receiving in his dreams. And so he was willing to lend us some of his sculptures for the show. And I'm so thrilled that we'll be presenting them alongside Walter Russell's works.
Well, we need to pause for our final break of this hour. Is that correct, producer? Yes, it is. And when we return, Jody, I want you to... I want to go right into Finster as soon as we get back, okay? Because I just think this is an amazing situation. Our guests are Rebecca Hoffberger and Jody Willey, the founder, director, and co-curator of the American Visionary Art Museum. That's Rebecca. And Willey, as a matter of fact, she's the co-curator of the of this exhibit, The Visionary Experience, St. Francis the Finster. And I know you're all out there wondering, who was Finster? Well, we're going to find out as soon as we get back. And you can come to the exhibition preview party on October the 2nd. However, also go to avam.org or phone AVAM 2410-241-1900. And for Jody, the source document, doc.com, thesourcedoc.com, Jody's first feature-length film.
Hello there, this is George Martin, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Oh, say, can you see it's really such a mess? Every inch of earth is a fighting mess. Giant pencil and lipstick tube-shaped flames continue to rain and cause screaming pain, and the Arctic stains from silver blue to bloody red as I beat find the sand and the sea.
Well, there's Brother Jimmy, and oh, say, can you see? Now, you can see that on the, I think, Rebecca, have you ever seen that phrase before anywhere?
In neon and spangled, right on Key Highway, right?
Yeah.
At a museum.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and love. It says, our neon signs actually have three buildings, as you know. Oh, say, can you see love? Is the middle one. And just like Jimi Hendrix said so wisely, when the power of love exceeds the love of power, then there will be peace.
Hey, good quote. That's a good quote, all right. Well, now, I'm going to find out more about what I've been puzzled about a long time ago. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention Rebecca Hoffberger and Jody really are our guests, and we're talking about the exhibit the American Visionary Art Museum, which the Visionary Experience, St. Francis to Finster, and everybody out there, and especially those guys over there in France and down there in South America, probably who in the world was Finster? So let's find out from Jody. Tell us about Reverend Howard Finster, America's most prolific self-taught artist.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about him, but Rebecca, feel free to jump in at any time because I know that he's so close to your heart as well. You know, most people know Howard Finster, who do know him, as a Baptist minister from Georgia with a sixth grade education who rose up to be the most prolific folk artist of the 20th century, who created over 40,000 paintings dedicated to God before his death. And he became a pop culture icon back in the 80s, actually, when he appeared in some music videos, a music video for the rock band REM, and he created artwork for the band The Talking Heads. Their album cover, Little Creatures, had his art, and his artwork was shown at the Phyllis Kind Gallery and just attracted the attention of all of these influential musicians and writers, and he ended up on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Oh, my.
And which was extraordinary, and he was such a natural on that show. He sang songs and just cracked jokes, and he was just an extraordinary person. I was so struck by him when I first met him in the 80s and ended up staying down at Paradise Gardens. I had a boyfriend who was down there helping Howard fix up his garden at the time. And he was so much more than what people thought he was, too. And that's what's so interesting. He was also part of a very large family and brought up on a farm, born in 1915, and not a religious family. He actually had an awakening and became a born-again Christian when he was 16. He became born again at 13, but started preaching at 16. So he started very early, and he became a traveling preacher and ministered 10 different congregations, and got married at 19 to his wife Pauline, and had 5 children, and became a handyman also to help support the family, and ended up building this incredible environment, Paradise Garden, down in Somerville, Georgia, that became this attraction that people would come to from all over the country. And he took all of these castaway parts and put them in together into these beautiful messages that helped to spread, helped to spread the word of God. And what was so interesting to me was to get to know him, you know, back in the 80s as this eccentric and lovable character who is such a kind-hearted person and a loving father, and to see him as this kind of eccentric. And I would see these UFOs in his paintings. So he's a Baptist minister, but he's much, much more than that. He had a very broad idea of Christianity, and I just remembered thinking, oh, that's funny, he's got UFOs in his paintings and angels flying around. And over the last 20 years, getting to know a number of shamans and clairvoyant people who actually have this gift of extra vision that a lot of us don't have, and seeing a number of different people from all walks of life, when I look at his work now, it makes me think that he very clearly had a very strong vision and was probably clairvoyant to be able to see into these other dimensions and paint them and paint his visions literally. And Norman Giraudoux, who is an ambassador to our show, he's this wonderful scholar and teacher at Lehigh University, has a new book coming out on Howard and exactly this aspect of his life, which is his religious experience, and that's something, you know, we're able to talk about a little bit in the show. And the artwork that we featured in the show is artwork that very specifically focuses on his visions. His very first vision he had was when he was 3 years old, and his sister had just died, and she appeared to him in the sky, descending down the staircase in a long white gown, and she said, "Howard, you're going to be a man of visions." and that started him off on his life. So he's a fascinating character.
Rebecca, you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think the hopeful news here, which is true about many of our visionary artists, is that Howard saw a little paint smudge while he was working on repairing a bicycle. He was using his kind of hands to spread the paint on a wheel, and looked up, and he looked at this, he saw this distinct human face in the smudge on his thumb, and he attributed that moment as being what began his career. He did not begin making his art till he was 60 years old, and then it's close to 47,000 numbered artworks.
Wow.
And they weren't just like dashed off. Some of them were unbelievably painting on glass, multi-layered, wooden towers we have in the show. I mean, very precise works as well. And so, you know, that wonder whether it's, the visionary postman from France who tripped on a stone during his route and then spent the next three decades of his life building what's called one of France's most, beloved environments, visionary environments, called the Palace of Dreams.
Mm.
It's just wonderful where the ordinary becomes so very extraordinary.
Oh, thank you for that. Well, since Janie Hendricks is going to be joining us in around 15 minutes or so, I think it's proper. Maybe it's not even proper at all. It's improper. But anyway, Jimi Hendricks was not only the greatest guitar player on planet Earth, but he was a visionary artist, a philosopher, and he was one of the kindest and most polite humans I ever met. Boy, I only was with him three or so times, but he was just so kind to everybody around him. Now, we were together with Janie when she brought her brother's drawings to AVAM, that is Rebecca, myself, Janie and her husband. Janie, how would you like to describe his work? Did I call Janie? I'm sorry. Rebecca, how would you like to describe his work?
What was amazing to me was how fresh they are. He worked in a lot of almost felt-tip pens that were a lot of hot pinks and neon blues and things, and the precision of them, and always a spiritual kind of so far beyond doodle. I had no idea that they would be as vibrant as they were. It's like they have his energy still with it. Because, if you look back at things that we did, even as children with the same materials 40 years ago, they tend to fade. These are as fresh as if he made them yesterday. And it's just the whole thing. Jody actually knew a man named Raffaele who was the official photographer through her dear friend Isis of Jimi Hendrix, and there's going to be a video recounting a kindness, as you put it, that he paid, that Jimi Hendrix played to a disabled fan, that is very deeply moving, and that's never been seen publicly before. So there's a lot of love in the show. In fact, we were amazed when Jody and I were trying to figure out which quotes should be the headlines in certain sections. And it is one of the visions these people have are profoundly humanitarian. They're not visions of conquering and, manipulating others. It's very interesting. It's all about, as Howard Finster would say, faith and worry can't live in the same heart. One has to go. And his friendships were with people of all different religions. He never tried to actively convert anybody. And so it's just a miraculous show. And I hope that it will inspire more people to use the time that they have on this earth to really be true to why they have come. And it doesn't matter that they make art, but they make an art of their lives.
One of the things you saw I was a little bit overjoyed, almost uncontrollable there, because they found the painting that most people had never known this aspect of Jimmy. When he and I got together, we didn't talk about music. We talked about symbols, consciousness, Atlantis, UFOs, reincarnation, but mostly about that pyramid and the eye in a triangle. And it was, when I mentioned this to some of the handlers, 30 years ago, that he was interested in the symbolism, they said, no way, no way, Jimmy doesn't talk to us about anything like that. Well, the drawing that they brought in was one that has never been shown before anywhere, and it shows his drawing of his first eye in a triangle and pyramid. Now, this is a 1968. This is before I'm trying to think of his name now, that just made about $1 billion on Dan Brown, has made about $1 billion on that pyramid and eye in a triangle stuff. So I'm so happy that the Visionary Arts Museum is going to have this piece so that other people can see what I saw so long ago. And it is true. He was heavily into all kinds of Kabbalistic understandings. You even saw a little Hebrew in his work, didn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. I was so surprised, too. And that sister was so lovely, so smart, and so caring. And yeah. I know she has a big responsibility on her shoulder with his legacy, but was very wisely chosen by Jimi Hendrix's father to have that discretion about how his work is shown, etc. And we couldn't have been more thrilled with her. It was just, and she has promised to come back many times, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, I know she fell in love with you, and she just loved. Traveling with you around the museum on the other floors when I was taking care of other stuff. I know she told me, she said, wow, she said, Bob, this is much more than you ever told me about. And I'm so glad that she got to see it. Well, we got to take our final break here there's no break. We're going to the news. And when we return, we'll be with Janie Hendrix, who will talk to us about her brother and the paintings that she submitted.
The clock and breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Lissiano.